Fired Up Show starts right now.
And welcome, everybody. Welcome back to the Fired Up Podcast right here on WJMS Media. I apologize for the hiatus. I had some work-related things that consumed my time, but I'm back now, and we have some interesting things that we're going to talk about on today's show. Want to start it off with, if you've been paying attention to the political news going on, particularly involving the legal travails of the 45th president of the United States, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. If you notice, this past week, number one, he continues to be plagued with his legal woes, yet that hasn't stopped him from running his mouth, creating all kinds of havoc with his comments about the judges and the prosecutors and so forth. He has talked so much trash about people involved in his trial that he, as recently as today, and it's Tuesday when I'm recording this, got slapped with another gag order on one of his trials. So we've got that going on. He also made a comment that created some controversy, where in an interview he said if he is not elected to the presidency in November, America could expect a bloodbath, which was widely taken as a similar call to action as we had back on January 6th, or where he called for his followers to come to Washington, D.C. It will be wild. And in his speech said, you have to fight like hell or you won't have a country anymore, which directly led to his followers storming the Capitol, looking to hang the sitting vice president at the time, Mike Pence, and also trying to seek out to kill the then Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi. We all lived through that spectacle. We have a situation where Donald Trump is, running the Republican Party, not just the MAGA wing, not just the conservatives, but the entire Republican Party. He is running that entity straight into the ground. His unhinged rants and tirades in reaction to his ongoing legal battles has obviously elevated the rhetoric to the point of, once again, inciting violence, it would seem. Now, on the, if you could call it an upside, as you may have heard if you follow the media, he got hit with a $453 million bond request in order to appeal the charges brought by New York Attorney General Letitia James in his fraud case. And, it appears that he got something of a minor victory in that the appellate court in New York reduced the amount of that bond that he needed to post from a total of about $465 million down to $175 million. Now, number one, that raises the question in my mind. We've said before, and he has said in the press that, there is a two-tiered system of justice in this country, one for him and one for everybody else. Well, apparently, this decision by the appellate court upholds that statement, because I can't think of another case where a defendant has argued to have his bond amount reduced by, you know, roughly two-thirds in any trial in New York. You know, Madoff didn't get that kind of deal. You know, nobody else has gotten that kind of deal to my knowledge. And, you know, it's clear that, you know, the everyday rank and file American would likely not get an appellate court to reduce, you know, their bond request by any amount. Now, just for background, when you have a judgment against you, and Trump has a judgment against him in that case, of, as I said, about $453 million with daily interest accruing of about $100,000 a day. And, you know, he appealed that amount that would be required for him to post as a bond if he decided to go forward with an appeal of the decision. And that's a requirement that in New York that, you know, if you are appealing a decision, you have to post a bond for the total amount of the monetary damages that you face in order to assure that should the decision in the appeal go against you, the funds are available to immediately pay the complainant the amount they're due. He had to post a $91 million bond in the decision that he was going to appeal in the E. Jean Carroll case. And in said in this case, in the business fraud case, he's facing, you know, $463 million with accruing interest. Now, even though according to the reports, even though the bond amount he is required to post has been reduced from $460-something million down to $175 million, he's still liable for the full amount of the damages that were assessed to him. So all this is really just lowering the threshold in order for him to pursue his appeal of the decision against him. So we'll see how that turns out. So that probably could be considered something of a small victory for Donald Trump. Okay. In the other case that came out on Friday, Donald Trump was trying to have the case involving election interference through paying off two women to keep silent about alleged sexual activities just prior to the 2020 election, the Stormy Daniels case and the hush money payments. That was rejected along with his request not only to have the case dismissed or to have it delayed until after the election. So, you know, he lost on that one. The trial will go forward. The judge has set a date to start the trial on April 15th, roughly about 3 weeks or so from today. And that one will move forward. So an up-down day for, you know, the Donald in the New York court system. In other news, and what I really wanted to get into a little bit here in the first segment was a decision that came down from the Supreme Court, or a case that was heard, rather, in the Supreme Court today involving the abortion pill methotrexate. And basically, you know, to kind of capsulize that in a nutshell, a judge in Texas who was on the receiving end of campaign funding from the wife of Senator Josh Hawley, and the judge in that district was selected specifically because he is the only judge in that district and, you know, had a reputation of being pro-conservative in his deliberations. This, you know, is part of something that has been seeing more coverage in the news called, you know, justice shopping or judge shopping, where, you know, particularly among Republicans, they will search out a judicial jurisdiction where there is a single judge that sees cases in that district and one who is favorable to, you know, the conservative viewpoint. Now, in this case, this judge, you know, upheld or held a decision that the FDA botched its approvals of mifepristone, and, you know, thereby, you know, that its approval and its ability to be placed on the market and available for, you know, for women to use was restricted by this court case. It went through the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, who, you know, overturned it, and then from there it was appealed to the Supreme Court, where, you know, it was heard today, and the results are that the case was, or most likely will be, rather, not adjudicated in the Supreme Court because, and according to the coverage, the doctors who brought the original lawsuit in Texas, you know, in the opinions of the justices, were not personally damaged by the decision, and therefore did not have what is called standing. Basically, they didn't have, you know, they didn't have a nickel in the battle in terms of how, you know, bringing this case to the Supreme Court. So remains to be seen, you know, and we don't know when the final decision will come down from the Supreme Court. But most observers are saying it is highly likely that the Supreme Court will decline to hear the case simply because these doctors, the original people who brought the lawsuit, don't have standing. They aren't eligible to argue the case in front of the Supreme Court. And, you know, this points out something that has been going on for a while, particularly in Republican circles. But, you know, it's been true. Democrats have judge shopped in a few cases also. But more importantly, well, not more importantly than the fact that this pill that assists so many women who seek to end a pregnancy for whatever reason, and as a side note, 63% of abortions that are carried out in this country are medical abortions. That is, they use the, you know, the abortion pill to end a pregnancy instead of going in for the surgical method. That being said, the idea is that, you know, it is yet another attack on women's reproductive and health in general that is coming from the conservative side of the Republican Party and the conservative justices in the federal court system. This was called out in the decision in the Dobbs case. If you recall, and we talked about it, you know, on my podcast, you know, a year and a half ago now, or almost 2 years, Clarence Thomas said that there were more targets that, you know, the Supreme Court could go after if, you know, the lower courts would bring them appropriate cases, and one of them was further restrictions on abortions in this country, ostensibly up to and including a complete national ban. Now, something to keep in mind, if the abortion pill cocktail is banned by the Supreme Court, that's not just going to affect those red states where, you know, abortion bans are already in place. This will be nationwide and total. So, you know, as a father of two daughters, a grandfather of, you know, three granddaughters, and a great-grandfather of a great-granddaughter, this is something that, you know, obviously I am concerned about for the future of, you know, the daughters in my family. And, you know, it should also not be lost on everyone that, like so many Republican decisions, these are not going to solely target people of color, poor people, disenfranchised people, and so forth. The overwhelming majority of women who use abortion pills to end a pregnancy are not women of color. They are not, you know, brown or, you know, Asian or whatever. They are white women of childbearing age. So, you know, and also keep in mind that that constituency is also heavily populated with women on the conservative or Republican side of the political spectrum. So, you know, essentially, as we've said, you know, it is a case where by supporting these Republican legislators at the state level and at the federal level, you know, you are essentially voting against your own interest. And it is not something that is only going to affect, quote, them, close quote. It's going to affect all women and all families in this country. And that is something that we all need to be very concerned about. Now, that being said, one of the things that we should be doing, by we, I mean all of the voters, regardless of party, is we should be questioning our current elected officials on their positions on these types of issues. And I've called for this many times on this show. You need to, you know, be in communication with your elected officials at the state level, with your governors, with your federal Congress people and your U.S. senators, and the office of the president. Find out where they stand on, you know, these issues, and if their positions don't match yours, then we need to be working to put people in office that do believe the way that we believe, whatever that might be. And again, this is not a Democrat issue or a Republican issue or an independent issue. This is a U.S. citizen issue. You know, we deserve to have elected officials representing us who believe as we believe, who think as we think, and who act as we want them to, not the other way around. So, you know, dig into who your elected officials are. Find out what their positions are on issues like abortion, like, you know, taxes, you know, all of these things. And if they are not in agreement, let them know what your desires are, what you elected them to that office to do, and follow up on it. Keep in contact with them. Become a pain in the ass about it. That's the only way that elected officials will respond to the wishes of the citizens, is when they see an overwhelming, continuous stream of opposition to their views by the people who voted to put them in office. And also, don't forget to let them know that just as we voted you in, Mr. State Legislator, Mr. Governor, Mr. Congressperson, or Mr. or Ms. Senator, we can vote you out. And, you know, we will if we are not pleased with how your record shapes up with how our feelings are on a given subject. So, you know, it's clear that, you know, there is, you know, a game afoot where particularly the Republican Party, as they're the party in power in the House of Representatives, and we're going to talk about that too in the second segment, how they are deciding however they want, or however the big dollar donors of the dark money that funds their campaigns want them to respond to these issues. I don't ever recall going into the election location and seeing a $20 bill standing up there getting ready to vote. What I see are people who vote. And it, since it is the people that elect them, that is the people that they work for, they need to respond to what the people request and require. So, something to keep in mind as we now move more fully into this election season. So, what do you think on that? Send me your opinion. Send me your questions. Send me your comments. The email address for the show is firedupradio@yahoo.com. Please, I'd love to hear from you. So, send me out an email. If you agree, if you disagree, if you want to discuss, this in more detail, let me know. And we'll do deeper dives on right here on Fired Up. So, all right, let's turn the page briefly. So a moment ago, I was talking about this thing, judge shopping, where Republicans, for the most part, are taking cases that they would like to see make their way to the Supreme Court to these districts around the country where there is only one judge. Well, that it seems to be problematic with some segments of the Republican Party. There's an article that came out of Huffington Post on the 14th. The headline is Mitch McConnell urges courts to ignore new rules meant to prevent judge shopping. So, again, the rule is in place to prevent people from taking court cases to judges that they feel, are favorable to them and where they're the only judge in the district, particularly when they're trying to strike down Biden administration policies. So, in the article, the new rules were issued by the Judicial Conference of the United States. That's a body. They have about 26 members that oversees the federal judiciary. And what that means is that, for example, if a case seeks a national injunction to reverse or block a federal government policy, it must be randomly assigned to a judge within the district court in which the case was filed. So the judicial conference is led by the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, currently John Roberts, and it consists of the chief judges of each circuit court of appeals, as well as representatives from the district court. Now, as it said, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell called this was an unforced error by the Judicial Conference, and he says, I hope they will reconsider. And I hope district courts throughout the country will instead weigh what is best for their jurisdictions, not half-baked, quote, guidance that just does Washington Democrats' bidding. So the article cites that the new rules that were put forward by the conference was an answer to years of controversy over the practice of judge shopping exploited by conservatives. Conservative activists and GOP attorneys general have increasingly directed their lawsuits against Biden administration policies to single-judge geographical divisions, particularly in Texas, where they know they will get a sympathetic hearing. In particular, the article states, conservatives have repeatedly filed suit on issues of national importance in the Amarillo, Texas federal courthouse in Northern Texas Federal District. That's due to the Amarillo courthouse has only one judge. The conservative activist and Trump appointee Judge Matthew Kaczmarek. Kaczmarek has consistently sided with conservatives in a series of highly controversial decisions that are often overturned on appeal. In 2021, he prevented the Biden administration from ending former President Donald Trump's Remain in Mexico immigration policy. That was eventually overturned by the Supreme Court. And, most notably, he issued a nationwide injunction blocking the distribution of the abortion drug mifepristone, which is what we were just talking about. That decision was put on hold by the Supreme Court as it hears arguments on appeal. And those arguments occurred today, Tuesday. Side note, from what judicial watchers at the Supreme Court are saying, and based on the judges' questions and the way they were interacting with the attorneys, the appearance is that the Supreme Court, as I said earlier, is either going to dismiss that case or refuse to hear the case, thus leaving the decision as to where it stands at the appellate court. So we'll see how that comes out. McConnell sent a letter with GOP Senators John Cornyn, Tom Tillis, to David Godbey, the chief judge of the district court in the Northern District of Texas, where Kaczmarek's Amarillo Courthouse is situated, urging him to ignore the Judicial Conference's new rules. Now, he's saying that the conference's policy is not legislation, and that it's Congress that decides how cases should be assigned in the inferior courts, and Congress has already spoken on this issue in an enacted statute. Congress gave that power to the individual district courts. Whatever the Judicial Conference thinks you ought to do, and this is McConnell speaking, what you actually choose to do is left to your court's discretion under the law. So, even when rules and practices might seem to favor them, Republicans seem to be, hell-bent for leather to find their own way around, over, under, or through a law to advance their own political agenda. This is part of the problem that we have in our divided government right now. And, it just means that, essentially one side is not playing by the rules, even if those rules are enacted by a body that is allegedly in line with or in affiliation with the Republican Party. So, it just another example of the games that are being played at the national level. And something else that, we need to be keeping an eye on as the voters and letting our elected officials know that, these types of, bypasses of, typical policy. And again, I get that it's not a law, it's not legislation, it's a recommendation from this conference, but the recommendation is not without merit. It is, much more beneficial for a case to be assigned into a district with multiple judges on a random basis as they're doing. Best example of that we currently have is the assignment of Judge Eileen Cannon to the documents case facing the former president down in Florida. She is a brand new judge, had little or no experience in trying a case of that magnitude, but because her number came up in the lottery, she's the judge that's assigned. So, it is beneficial to have a judge that is more fairly assigned through, a random lottery than taking a case and, hearing it in a district where you know that when it goes to appeal, it's going to go to a single judge because that judge is the only one in the district. Just another little example of the games that are played And as I said, why we need to make sure that we exercise our diligence to keep our elected officials in line. So we'll keep tabs on this and let you know what becomes of it. We'll keep you posted right here on Fire It Up. So let's take our break right now. And when we come back, want to talk about the implosion of the Republican House caucus that's going on before our very eyes. So when we come back, we'll get into that. You're listening to Fire It Up right here on WJMS Media. This is Steven, and we'll be right back after the break.
I was going to get my voter ID card because they said you had to have it in order to be able to vote. When I got there, I approached the gentleman at the counter and told him what I wanted. I showed him my veteran's card. He said that was no good. He said you had to have a state-issued ID card in order to be able to vote.
Seniors, women, people of color, young adults, those with low incomes, people with disabilities. Every citizen needs to review your documentation now to make sure you can vote in November. Please check with your local county election board to make sure the name on your photo ID closely matches the name you used when you registered to vote. Please contact us at 866-OUR-VOTE or 866-687-8683.
And welcome back to Fired Up right here on WJMS Media. So we talked through the first segment about the former Republican president and the issues surrounding him and some of the things facing the upcoming elections as we move toward November. Now, one thing to keep in mind and really need you to focus on a couple of key facts here. Ever since its founding in 1789, Congress has enacted somewhere between 200 and 600 statutes during each of the 115 biennial terms, where more than 30,000 statutes have been enacted. This current term, the 118th, the House of Representatives has passed exactly 47 bills. All right, so 200 to 600 in a, quote, normal, close quote, year, and 47 since January of 2023. That gives you a sense of just how dysfunctional this House of Representatives has been over the course of its current Congress. And they have spent the majority of their time, easy to say, infighting and bickering and grandstanding both within their own party as well as facing the large issues that our country is facing. For instance, in no particular order, we have the war going on between Ukraine and Russia. We have the current situation in the Middle East with Israel and its battle with Hamas in Palestine. And we have the ongoing battles over the southern border. And in all of these, and these are just three of the big ticket items, as it were, Congress has failed once again to pass a unified budget. We have seen four near government shutdowns where it has come up to literally the last hour, the 11th hour before the funding for the government of the United States runs out on, you know, four separate occasions just over this past term. It is clear that the level of dysfunction in the United States House of Representatives, it has reached epic proportions. And that's really saying something, given that this same kind of scenario has shown up in Congresses going back at least the last 18 years or 9 congressional terms, and, you know, has been problematic, and that's putting it mildly, for how our country not only governs itself and runs, but more importantly, the perception of our country from outside of our borders. It has been clear that our allies around the world have expressed great concern, were very worried when the previous administration, the 45th president, took office, and among his first speeches was a claim that he was going to withdraw the United States from NATO. He moved us out of the Paris Climate Accords and several other key international agreements and doctrines that the United States has been, if not a founding member of, a partner in for the last two decades. So what we have is a situation where the United States is looked at as, you know, the leader of the free world, but with an asterisk next to it, because it depends more and more on just who occupies and will occupy the Oval Office in the coming term. It has been clear that several European leaders have said that they are concerned that the longevity of the United States leadership in the world is very much to be reconciled on an hour-by-hour basis. And you know, they are extremely concerned that the potential Republican incoming administration, should they win, you know, the national election, is going to move from a democratic, small d, system of government and become an authoritarian government along the lines of, you know, Russia and Viktor Orban's Turkey and Xi Jinping's China and Kim Jong-un's North Korea. And that has led to, you know, some real serious concerns and discussions among our allies and friends around the world about what do we do if the United States turns its back on the rest of the world, withdraws itself, you know, into its border, becomes isolationist, and all of these things. Now, this is a problem that every American needs to be giving thought and be concerned about. This is not a Republican-only issue or a Democrat-only issue. This is a governing issue for the United States of America. You know, it is vitally important that we stand at the head of the line of the Western allies to stop the progress of Vladimir Putin's Russia in progressing outward from their borders, you know, taking Ukraine, looking at Poland and other NATO allies that neighbor it. And remember, we are a part of NATO. And if Russia attacks, say, for example, Poland is a NATO ally. And our agreement under the NATO doctrine is that an attack on one NATO member is an attack on all NATO members. So the prospects of the United States being drawn into World War III is one that hangs very much in the balance every day and is a real and present risk for the future. So that being said, it is vitally important that the next administration, either the Biden administration, if they win re-election, or the Trump administration, since he is the presumptive Republican nominee, if they win the national election, needs to look and think long and hard about America's place in the world and what the what the day after would look like if, you know, worst case scenario, Putin goes on a rampage, decides he's going after Poland, which now places the United States, by virtue of its membership in the NATO charter, at participating in what will quickly become World War III. Now, match into that the fact that China and North Korea and other authoritarian states in the world are looking very closely at this to see what exactly the United States is going to do. So, all of that being said, what does that mean for you and me, the electorate of the United States? And it's quite simply this. The United States electorate needs to clearly, loudly, and firmly let its administration, let the government know that getting caught up in World War III because of inactions in Ukraine and Russian aggressions in Europe and, you know, the aggressions by the communist Chinese against Taiwan and, you know, more saber rattling by Kim Jong-un in North Korea. All of these things represent an existential threat to our country. And if you think that, you know, we can just withdraw within our borders, go back to being the isolationist nation we were before World War I, and, you know, everything will just be all okie dokie, that's not true. You know, the United States is part of a deeply connected global economy and a global political structure that requires us to, you know, set the example of how democracy is supposed to function. Now, you know, all of that, those are very pretty words, but what does it mean in reality? What it means is that the United States has to take very seriously, and let me back up a half step and say that the voters of the United States need to take very seriously who it is that they place in the leadership role in this country. You know, the Republicans in the person of Donald Trump and his allies and supporters have made it very clear. They have put out the Project 2025 playbook. They have strengthened and encouraged, you know, actions against the rank and file voters in this country. They are very much in lockstep with the you know, 1% or the 1/10 of 1% people who are the richest people you know, in the world, never mind in this country. And that's where they are placing their loyalties with. Meanwhile, the rest of us out here in rank and file land, we're going to be left to figure it out for ourselves. And unfortunately, the outcome does not look very promising if we come into that scenario. And it should be noted, you know, for those of you who are supportive of the, you know, presumptive Republican nominee and his agenda, realize something, that, you know, the actions of the Republican administration under the pressure of MAGA and, you know, all of the ultra conservatives, they're not going to stop their actions once they have sufficiently isolated the poor, the middle class, you know, the disenfranchised, you know, the black, brown, and other minorities in this country. The policies they are putting in place are going to affect everybody who is not a mega millionaire or an ultra billionaire in this country. So if you think that they're only coming after the immigrants, or they're only coming after African Americans or Hispanics or Asians or any of the minorities that make up the diversity of this country. If you really think that is where that will stop, then you are sadly mistaken, because these policies, just like the fact that the Dobbs decision and the overturning of Roe v. Wade was not something that just impacted women of color and women of, you know, poor women and so forth. It affected all women. So, you know, keep in mind that if you, you know, happen to be white in America, that's no protection at the end of the day, in real terms. That's no real protection for you from the policies that look to be enacted. Your children will suffer equally with schools that, you know, no longer provide meals for low-income students of any color. You know, and this is where we are headed. This is why it is critically important. And again, doesn't matter your political affiliation. We are talking about the progress of our country, our collective country, moving forward. And you need to ask yourself a very serious question. Does the individual that you are considering giving your vote, do they really, really have your interest at heart? You have to ask yourself that question in the cold light of reality and honesty. And, you know, if you can't look at yourself in the mirror and say that, you know, this candidate thinks like I think, is concerned about the things that I'm concerned about, and cares about my children and my grandchildren as much and in the same way as I do. If the answer to those questions are no, or I'm not sure, you must rethink who you are voting for. It is just that simple. Now, I know some of you out there are saying, okay, here goes Steve again, running around crying wolf, or running around with his hair on fire, being Chicken Little, saying the sky is falling. That's not the case. In order to back this up, I encourage you strongly to dig into the contents of Project 2025. And with regard to the current political strife going on revolving around in vitro fertilization and, you know, the Dobbs Act and so forth, I encourage you also strongly to go look up something called the Comstock Act. That's Comstock, which is actually a law on the books in this country, which, among other things, restricts sending what it defines as immoral materials through the Postal Service. And Project 2025 is calling on the legislature, the House and the Senate, to enact or return the Comstock Act to active status. Realize this act was passed in the 19th century. This act is well more than 150 years old. However, it does, among other things, restrict the mailing or sending of what it called immoral materials, and, you know, defines them as anything that could be used in the process of conducting an abortion. But it goes beyond that to everyday items that get shipped through the mails, including birth control pills, birth control products, condoms, anything that could be used to interfere with the process of procreation and creating new life. Now, think about that for a second. you would not be able to order, for instance, medications that deal with fertility issues, any medications that deal with aborting a pregnancy. And mifepristone is one, but there are others out there on the market, both prescription and over the counter, that have applications that can be used to interfere with a pregnancy. Under the Comstock Act, all of those materials would not be able to be shipped through the mail. That means they would not be able to be sent by the U.S. Post Service. They would not be able to be delivered by UPS, FedEx, DHL, or any other delivery service that transports materials from point A to point B. So the end result of that is that pharmacies would not be able to get medications that treat conditions, but also can have an impact on aborting a pregnancy. Mifepristone actually has a multitude of uses with regard to women's reproductive health that goes beyond just the simple fact of ending a pregnancy. There is a very real possibility that a Republican administration, and it might not be the second coming of the Trump administration, but the next Republican administration would use the Project 2025 playbook and the Comstock Act and other laws that have been on the books for decades and centuries to interfere with women's reproductive health, with overall family planning, and many other features. As we've said before, it doesn't stop there. There are laws that are possible to be resurrected that would make interracial marriage illegal, that would make same-sex marriages illegal. And not just in red states. These are nationwide prohibitions. So, look very carefully at what the political future is based on who the candidates you are thinking about will bring into place. And remember, it's not just federal. All of you in the states need to be aware of what your state legislatures are doing. What is your governor in favor of? What are your state senators, your state representatives, even down to the local level? What is your city council considering that could have an impact on, aspects of your everyday life? If you are in a same-sex relationship, would these laws make your relationship with your partner illegal and subject to prosecution? Would it, impact not just what books your children read in schools, but what education they are taught? Is it going to rewrite the learning plans for, our children, all the way from elementary school all the way up through college? We've seen that with the battles going on over critical race theory and diversity, DEI, and all of these things. What would it mean in our country if, the strictest adherence to all of these ultra-conservative principles came into being? And keeping all of that in mind, look at who your candidates are. Look at who you are thinking about electing. Ask them the questions. Get in front of them at their rallies. Send them emails. Call their offices, and ask them, what is your opinion on implementing the Comstock Act in, you know, whatever state you live in. And listen carefully to what they say so that you can be aware of just how dangerous the territory is that we could find ourselves in a, you know, a matter of 7 months. So, you know, it is clear that not only is the clock ticking, but we are moving into the 11th hour with what actions we need to take as the electorate in this country. And, you know, it is not something that we can bury our heads in the sand over. I truly believe that, you know, with the election of, you know, a certain number of, you know, so-called conservative or ultra-conservative or MAGA or whatever you want to call them, you know, elected officials, our country could be very drastically changed, and not necessarily for the better, but it is something where, you know, we as the citizens of this country could be deeply impacted by the results of, you know, our actions at the ballot box. Take a look at our U.S. House of Representatives. It has never, ever been more fractured and convoluted than it has been in the past 2 years. Just recently, Wisconsin Representative Mike Gallagher resigned, and he has left the House of Representatives. That followed the resignation of Colorado Representative Ken Buck. Now, both of these guys were, you know, among the conservative group. And, you know, they both said, in effect, that they'd had all they could stand and, you know, just weren't going to participate in, you know, what they saw as the obsessively fixated approach of retribution and vengeance for contrived injustices of the past. Again, remember, this Congress has only passed, you know, like 47 bills in the 16 now months that they have been in session. The least number of bills passed by any Congress since the 1950s, and a fraction of the 200 to 600 bills that Congress passes, you know, on average, since its founding in the late 1700s after the signing of the Declaration of Independence, or rather the Constitution. You know, Ken Buck, you know, got so fed up and, you know, naming his complaints, you know, among them, the nonsensical approach to impeach President Biden, which has turned up nothing and gone nowhere. We saw the same in the Judiciary Committee's meetings on, you know, Hunter Biden. That didn't go anywhere. And, you know, it has become an issue where they are more intent on, you know, persecuting the people rather than prosecuting the business of the United States. You know, Gallagher, who, according to, you know, an article in Politico, a former Marine and committee chair who was considered a rising star, was also one who abruptly resigned. You know, he timed his resignation, to give you an idea of the thought that, you know, goes into this kind of decision. He timed his resignation for April 19th. Now, that date is of particular importance because it is exactly one day past the deadline where a state governor would be allowed to hold a special election to fill a vacated seat. So he timed his exit not just as a statement of his feelings about the overall performance of the Congress he was a part of, but he also timed it as, you know, an arrow to the heart of the Republican Party by denying them the opportunity to appoint another Republican to take his place for the remainder of his term. So that seat will remain vacant until it is filled in November. This is the kind of games that are being played, and not all of these games are good games. You know, it has gotten to the point where essentially Republicans are eating their young and, you know, doing themselves disservice out of frustration and spite against what they perceive as the inaction of the Republican majority in the House of Representatives. And, you know, it is just characteristic. We've seen the same thing happen in state legislatures where, bills that were considered, unpassable, such as codification of, the abortion protections from Roe v. Wade into state constitutions. We have seen that overwhelmingly voted in place in such deep red states as North Carolina and others, that the Congress people and the state representatives are realizing that a critical point has been reached where the public in those states in particular and in the United States in general have just said, enough is enough. We are going no further with this. That's the kind of pressure that needs to continue to be brought to bear. So our homework is clear, and we need to take up this challenge with all haste, as, again, we're 7 months out from the national election. So take a look at who you're going to vote for. Ask them the questions. Check their record. And if they don't match up with the overall general welfare sense that you have for your state or for this country, find another candidate. Talk to other candidates. So, it is a critical time for the United States. It's a critical time for all 50 of our states. And we need to think about what kind of nation we're going to be and what direction we are going to go to. So that's going to do it for this week. Sorry I got a little ranty, but, it's a conversation that needed to be had. If you have thoughts, send an email to the show, firedupradio@yahoo.com. I really want to hear some feedback on this. Where do you stand with the direction of our, local, state, and federal elected officials? So let's have a dialogue, and we will continue to discuss this on future episodes of Fired Up. And until then, I look forward to speaking with all of you again in 7 days. Take care, everyone.